galaxy, the Clone Wars spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2003 through 2005.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, covering all things Star Wars animation and continuing with our summer programming covering the Clone Wars micro-series. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Chapter 21, the first episode of Season 3, or DVD Volume 2. These episodes are a little bit longer, so rather than trying to cover two or three per episode, we are going to just discuss one. And joining me are, as always, Baron from a Barnes & Noble in California.
Yes, the internet connection went out at my house, so I had to go down to a local Barnes & Noble's, and I'm sitting here in the children's section, and there's no children and no Twizzlers.
That's probably for the best on both counts.
In the children's section, Twizzlers are known as bait. Don't do that.
And as you hear, Nathan P. Butler also joining us.
Hey, all.
Also with us, of course, is Jen.
Hey, I am not at a Starbucks or Barnes & Noble, so that's pretty exciting.
And hopefully DeBeed is not going to make toast.
He's forbidden. No toast, ever.
And joining us also is Jerry, Darth Bounty.
Hey, guys, what's up?
All right. Well, jumping right in, as mentioned, we are going to be discussing Chapter 21 tonight, which starts off, this is my favorite moment from the Clone Wars micro series. Starts off with the rescue by the ARC troopers. And this just, wow, this was it for me. This is what I hoped nearly every episode of our current Clone Wars series would be like. Tragically, it's not, but this is what I was hoping for. And I know, Jen, big Clones fan, you had to be right there with me on this.
Oh, yeah. I had a big, stupid grin. I forgot this had existed. For some reason, I have no memory of these last couple episodes. So when this came on, I was oh, my God, yay, the whole time. just could not stop. Everything they did, like, one-upped it further. So I didn't even comment. Usually I talk out loud at the TV or something. I was too busy grinning like a moron at this. This was so much fun. I loved it.
Yeah, Jen, I'm right there with you. I mean, I thought episode 21 just overall was a lot of fun. And just seeing, well, I guess with this particular setting, we never saw the clones go up against General Grievous in the previous season. You know, like, I guess the clones that would have been taken out prior to the Jedi being kind of like cornered like that. But seeing the ARC troopers go in there and just like take command of the situation, fly on in. I mean, the whole thing was super cool.
I like that we got to see the minigun because all these clones come with the minigun. And we finally get to see somebody with one. So it's fun.
That was one of my favorite parts of this episode is seeing them load up their guns with the, you know, and all their guns are shining, full power, you know. And these ARC troopers, I think this is the first time that we're actually seeing troopers that aren't being led by Jedi. Am I right about that? As far as this micro series going, it's like they're leading themselves here. There's no like Jedi general that's giving them orders and telling them what to do. These ARC troopers are doing it by themselves. And I mean, that is just awesome.
But isn't that Captain Fordo? Isn't that the same guy that Obi-Wan already had, you know, working with him? Did he send them as backup to help them? I mean, I like the fact that it's definitely the clone troopers come in, kick butt. They've got the great tactics where you've got the gunship kind of behind the edge of the ship debris so they can shoot out, but it's like, you know, just a cover system where nobody else can fire back in at them. But I could have sworn that the red ARC trooper we see here is Captain Fordo from Munilus. So he was still getting orders from Obi-Wan to go there. Although it kind of ends up with Ki-Adi-Mundi being the one to be kind of like, okay, guys, thanks, nothing to see here. Thanks for saving my bacon. Because they certainly don't take orders when they get there from a Jedi.
Well, they don't even really take his orders because he's telling them, no, we have to pursue. We have to go after him. And they're like, no, we have to leave now.
Well, I'm guessing their greater orders from Obi-Wan or whomever was go in there and get them out, you know, not stand and fight. I mean, they recognize, of course, that they had the two Jedi that could still make it, that could still pull through if they reacted right then and there. So, yeah, I thought that was very interesting. And the way, you're right, if that was Fordo, and I can't imagine why it wouldn't be, he was the one completely in charge. And come on, the space whale Deco gunship, that's just the best.
It's supposed to be a Rancor face, apparently, but I really didn't get Rancor from it. Did any of you guys notice, this is something they mentioned in the commentary on the DVD, but it was never something that I ever caught. It's so subtle that it shot past me, that when Ki-Adi-Mundi, he's aboard the gunship, they're getting ready to leave, they're talking about who survived and who didn't. We know that, you know, Sha'agi and Tarsier and Dakmon Barak are definitely dead. Kukurk is presumed dead. He's just in that hibernation or whatever. But then he looks over at the two that are with him, Ayla and then underneath Shaak Ti, and they go from a shot of Shaak Ti sort of laid out sideways to one where it's more like he's looking closer at her face. Supposedly, that was supposed to be a touching moment to hint at the idea of a possible relationship between Ki-Adi-Mundi and Shaak Ti that they wound up never running with or taking to fruition anywhere else, mainly because of the whole relationships for Jedi and the fact that Ki-Adi-Mundi already has multiple wives anyway with the whole Saurian exception and whatnot. But apparently there was supposed to be a hinted relationship or some sort of familiarity other than just a brother-in-arms or sister-in-arms type of thing, and I didn't see it at all. It's in the commentary, but if they hadn't said that, I would have had no clue they were trying for that. You guys?
No. That's... yeah, no.
That would never have occurred to me, because the Jedi are they're forbidden from having that, and other than Anakin, that never has come up, so it would never have occurred to me.
Now he's on location, but he has his own soundtrack.
Yes. Well, you know, the one thing that's... I never got that. I never got the relationship between those two. But what was strange to me is, why would they even send people to rescue Jedi? Because they're supposed to have a big disconnection. And if you die in battle, you know, that's what you're supposed to do as a Jedi, you know, defending honor, defending the weak. So if these Jedi die, why is the Jedi Order sending anyone to rescue them? You know, and that was always the question I had, because if you're a great warrior, you're dying like you're supposed to, you're doing your duty, why are they sending people to rescue them? So I kind of got that as a little bit weirder. And when Ki-Adi-Mundi it looks like he's so concerned, it just kind of all came together like that for me, where it just kind of all made sense, because, you know, they're already kind of going against the grain of caring. And so it just kind of like, you know, he was in a emotional position, you know, he just survived something that a lot of Jedi didn't, and like that. But I just thought it was always strange that they send someone to go rescue a Jedi when they're not supposed to have attachments, you know?
You know, I wouldn't have taken it as a relationship in so much as my thought there was that Ki-Adi-Mundi was just so overwhelmed by what happened. He just couldn't believe he was looking at two fellow Jedi get treated that way. He says later to the council that, have you ever seen someone who could hold their own against five Jedi? I just took it more of like, I can't believe what just happened here. I mean, we're Jedi. Look what happened. I guess, Barrett, from, you know, I never at any point thought about exactly what you're talking about. But if I had to speculate, I would say that it probably wasn't out of attachment, like, hey, those are our friends, we have to save them. I took it more as, let's get one of them back because we need as much intel about this General Grievous as possible. If we know Grievous is there. Now, granted, they don't talk until a little bit later about, hey, getting Grievous is the key to the war. But knowing the situation, I guess I took it more that they're going there to clean up the situation and learn everything they can. It never came out like, we've got to go save our friends.
But on the flip side of that, the Jedi aren't warriors who are ready to die, and so there's no remorse about it. They're peacekeepers. I mean, Obi-Wan tells us in episode 4 that the Jedi were guardians of peace in the galaxy. And then Yoda tells us in Empire Strikes Back that wars not make one great. So they're not great warriors who are just, if you die, if you fall in the line of battle, well, so be it. That's them trying to preserve their own kind alive makes sense.
We that were about to die. Salute you. Right?
Right. Yeah.
Did anybody else have an issue with the fact that they are weakening the Jedi? You know, this is the second episode where, I mean, we just saw these, you know, tremendous episodes with Asajj Ventress and Anakin using force powers and being very powerful. And now we're getting these episodes where the Jedi are weak and they can be killed. And not only can they be killed, they can be killed in this mass effect. You know, you don't need millions of aliens to be raining down bullets or lasers on them. You know, you can have one person kill a bunch of Jedi. And I think that's for the first time that we actually saw that. And, you know, I just wonder if anybody else had a problem with that, because in the original trilogy, you know, it's only Luke, man, and Jedi are invincible, even though Qui-Gon says, you know, he wishes that in episode one that Jedi couldn't die. But it just seems like they're weakening down these Jedi, and it kind of bothered me a little bit.
But is it weakening the Jedi, or was it just trying to build Grievous up to be this sort of super adversary for the Jedi? I'm not sure that it's so much a weakening, because, I mean, these Jedi were still fighting pretty fiercely. It's just that Grievous was incredibly quick. He certainly isn't elsewhere when we see him. But in this incarnation, Grievous is almost like, you know, Sith-level crazy fighter. You know, you would almost put him up there with Darth Maul. In fact, I'm pretty sure, now this, I may be mixing my quotes here, but I'm pretty sure George Lucas even said initially that he wanted Grievous to be a threat that, from a combat standpoint, that could have stood up to or been a step beyond what was seen of Darth Maul, that you have to ramp up the threat, otherwise it feels like the series is going downhill. You've got to ramp it up episode to episode. I don't think he did it in the film, but wouldn't that be what's happening here, ramping up Grievous?
Yeah, I think that's more what it was. Just Grievous being made to look like this total, just crazy, insane, bad Mama Jown. Because that's why they sent Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan disposed of Maul, so having Obi-Wan go after Grievous, he's the only one who's been able to take down a Sith Lord of that magnitude. So Grievous's reputation preceding him. And also, I don't really think it's the Jedi being depowered, because, I mean, it's not like it's just some battle droid where somebody took a swipe at a battle droid, he catches the wrist and, no, I don't think so, and smacks him back in the face. Nothing like that. If that would have been definitely depowering of the Jedi and ridiculous. But just this one super bad general, I'm okay with it.
I thought it was kind of refreshing, actually, because we see nothing but the Jedi pretty much for the most part in the current Clone Wars series. They're almost untouchable, except for Evan Peel. None of the Jedi really bite it ever. So I find it refreshing to see that someone can actually challenge them, because usually when you see a Jedi now, it's like, oh, he'll be fine. He's a Jedi. There's no threat here. So this, I liked it. I thought it was fun.
Well, heck, we even get Jedi coming back to life in the new series. We get Eeth Koth supposedly dying on Geonosis, and then, nope, it's all right. He's alive and well in the new series. In fact, this episode, actually, if you look at the Jedi Council scene, they refer to, they have an Eeth Koth character there that they said, oh, crap, that can't be Eeth Koth. No, we're going to make it Aegon Kolar. And now they've had to turn around and re-retcon their retcon, or retcon or whatever the heck you call it. So no, don't worry about it. It's Eeth Koth again all of a sudden. I would say that when it comes to Grievous, I think that one thing that should stand out is he was this warrior before he became the cyborg. I mean, he is meant to have this extreme prowess in battle. I think it's pronounced Qui-Mayan Jai Shilal, the Kalish warlord, before he becomes Grievous. I'm pretty sure that translates as Chuck Norris or something like that if you translate it over. But this isn't it isn't like this is a character who it's not like Dooku said, okay, here I'm recruiting you, now go out and fight Jedi. I need to train you. He does say, I was trained in the Sith arts or lightsaber arts or whatever it is, he says, by Count Dooku himself. But that's not exactly the extent of his training. This is a dude who, you know, he's been conquering across his planet and probably several others before he ever came into this battle.
What did we think about Grievous's voice in this? I mean, we're so used to Matthew Wood doing it now that how'd you guys take this?
I love Grievous's voice in the Micro series.
Me too.
I hate it in the Revenge of the Sith.
Me too. This
but
was a great voice.
So good in here.
It's a little sound wave, but I think it works for him. And you can hear me on Now Play and talking about the Transformers movie retrospective.
It's also his second voice he's had in this. In the last episode, he was played by John DiMaggio. Now he's played by Richard McGonagall. He's got two voices already in this series. And frankly, they both turn out a little bit better than the way that it winds up turning out later. But then again, you could argue that the way his voice turns out later with Matthew Wood, that could just be because of whatever it is now that causes him to cough and have all the respiratory stuff. Apparently, it's not having his chest crushed as in this series, because that's right before Revenge of the Sith, and he's coughing all throughout the new series. But whatever did that, you could make the argument took him from this voice to the other one.
It is an intergalactic ragweed season during the Clone Wars. So the Jedi are saved. Well, the remaining Jedi are saved. And we get what I guess, feel free to disagree with me on the forums, I'm sure someone will, what I believe is a Force vision being had by Yoda of Qui-Gon, at least I think that was Qui-Gon behind that nose, and Anakin in the swamps of Dagobah with the Force tree and what? Am I right on that, Nathan? Is that...
You are correct, sir.
That's a little bit weird.
Why? It works. It works pretty well. I mean, Qui-Gon's nose doesn't seem to work very well. I don't know why he'd be having a vision of Qui-Gon with a nose that big, unless Yoda being so small made the nose just look freaking huge from his point of view.
That's exactly what my thought was, because yeah. You know how when you're a child, everything looks really big. Exactly. So maybe Yoda being that short.
Exactly. And in his vision, young Anakin, played by Frankie Ryan Manriquez instead of by Matt Lucas, delivers his lines much better than Jake Lloyd ever did. So he's correcting things in his vision, too. Now, actually, what I liked is the use of the tree on Dagobah. This was something that people got kind of flustered over, like, wait a second, why is he thinking about the tree on Dagobah? Because the old story was from, I guess, the Thrawn trilogy, that while Yoda was fighting in the Clone Wars against a Bafashi Dark Jedi, winds up on Dagobah, kills the Dark Jedi, and it's like the dark side energy from that figure is what sort of warps the tree and creates the Cave of Evil. Except then Lucas comes around and says, nope, Yoda was never on Dagobah until the end of Revenge of the Sith. And we're like, oh, crap. Turns out, there was a story back in Star Wars Tales number 16, I believe it was, where they sort of tried to tell that story, except instead of making it Yoda, they made it a Yoda species Jedi named Minch. They named him after one of the early production names for Yoda before Lucas picked Yoda as the final name. And this is a character who goes and fights a Bafashi Dark Jedi, kills him, and creates the Dark Side Tree on Dagobah. It's just that it's 700 years before A New Hope. And it was always just kind of tossed out because, well, it's supposed to be Yoda. And then as soon as it wasn't supposed to be Yoda, they brought that story back in. So it's kind of cool because it's like Yoda's having a vision of a place he hasn't been yet, but it is a place that does exist. It's like he's seeing a future location he'll be near, but not something where you'd have to sit back and say, well, wait a second, that doesn't even exist yet. Yeah, it does. Now. I really like the way that it wound up sort of, it's almost like the way that the continuity reshaped itself made it work out better than it even originally did.
Yeah, but see, it wouldn't matter to me continuity-wise whether it existed in the continuity at that point that he had the vision, because he could still have the vision and wonder, hey, what is that tree? It's not that he had to fully understand the vision himself, so it could have very well been of a tree that has not yet been created that houses the dark side. I mean, is that kind of what you're saying, Nathan, that seems like it's a disconnect? Because I'm not really sure if it is, if it's just a vision.
No, I think there was a point at which people were asking, why would he be having a vision of a place that he's never seen, or a place that doesn't even exist yet? Like, if Yoda is supposed to be the one fighting the Dark Jedi to create the tree, then why would it be there? Why would he recognize what the heck is going on in the vision? He'd recognize Qui-Gon, he'd recognize Anakin, but why would he have any reason to recognize the Cave of Evil and the tree? And it wound up being something that didn't become an error. It's almost like a self-correcting error here. Unlike Anakin's knighting and everything, we'll see in a moment, but it worked out. It was one of those things people nitpicked, but they were nitpicking mainly because they didn't realize their nitpick wasn't needed. Like, there was a solution, it's just that it wasn't a new solution that was needed. It was an old solution that already existed. It just got a quick retcon and, oh, the old solution works again.
Honestly, one of the really big things that bothers me about all of these visions that Yoda's getting, they should know that Anakin is turning to the dark side day by day by day by day, and I think they're just letting it go. And I think that this proves my point, that I've made over the years that they've known about Anakin going to the dark side and Anakin and Padme, which we will see coming up, which will have more to prove my point. But I think that because he's the chosen one, they just kind of let things go with him because they're getting all kinds of information. Yoda is getting all kinds of information about the inner heart of Anakin, and they do nothing about it. And I love this scene because this is just another piece of the puzzle where Yoda's getting some more information about Anakin. What do? They knight him.
But what does that say about Anakin going dark? He's just going into the cave. I always looked at that as it's foreshadowing the fact that he's going to go through the trial of the spirit, where you have to sort of look at a mirror of yourself when he goes towards the tree. The same thing that Luke does when he goes in the tree. He takes his weapons with him. He has a trial of spirit. He sees himself as Vader. He faces the idea of him going dark as well. All it is a little better voiced Anakin walking into the tree. How does that at all suggest he's going dark?
If it was just that one vision that Yoda has, I would say, no, it doesn't suggest he's going dark. But we just saw Yoda have a vision when he's beaten down, when Anakin is beaten down Asajj using the dark side powers to defeat her. And Yoda sees that. So if I'm assuming that these are kind of going in order, then Yoda is seeing a pattern of dark side usage by Anakin. And he is not questioning it. And that's my thing. That's what I'm saying. So it's not that this particular visage by itself, but it's the whole accumulation of the visions that he's getting, and they're not doing a thing about it.
But he didn't really have a vision of Anakin beating down Asajj. Anakin got flashes of a surprised look from Obi-Wan and a surprised look from Yoda and a surprised look from Qui-Gon. So I think we're meant to say that the training that he's been given is being pushed aside. Not that those three are having visions because, well, Qui-Gon's dead. And Obi-Wan doesn't say a lick about it when he comes back other than, well, it's a trial you shouldn't have had to face if you had been listening, just like a punk kid did not listen. If Obi-Wan had a vision of what he was doing, there would have been a little more to say about it when he got back. He wouldn't have just been like, oh, how was your flight?
See, this whole thing really confused me leading into the stuff with the knighting is because did Anakin go through the trial of the mirror? Because did we miss that? Like, I'm really confused by that because I thought maybe this was foreshadowing it. Like, I don't know. This really jarred me out of the story because I couldn't quite follow what was happening.
The trial of the spirit was supposed to be what he does later. So yeah, they knight him, I think, prior to him going through the trial, unless that's the trial of insight. They mention the trial of the skill, the flesh, courage, and spirit, and they leave out insight, which I'm not sure if that was something that was added later continuity-wise or what. But I've always seen this one with him going to Nelvan as being the trial of the spirit, where he looks into himself, unless that might be the trial of insight, and maybe the trial of spirit was what he faced when going up against Asajj. But if that's the case, then he failed it, didn't he?
Well, Obi-Wan says later on in, I think it'll be episode 23 or 24, when Anakin goes on his little trip on his white Bantha, that you've never had the trial of the spirit. This is it. So, or you've never had the proper Jedi trials. This is kind of your trial of the spirit.
Right, and so that's
we'll see more about that.
I think what he says is that Anakin has been through tougher trials than the Jedi trials would send him through, right, before he gets knighted.
Yeah, and that's what the EU goes with, too. The EU goes with the idea that his trials were his war experiences.
And I think that he did have a sort of, Jen, what you called a mirror kind of experience, because they have a scene here where Anakin is kind of walking through the crowd of Coruscant, and he's kind of looking at the mirror at all of the different inhabitants, and he's kind of looking at himself, and I kind of took that as kind of a trial of him looking into himself. Because it kind of seems like he can't outstand aliens.
No, that's more of he senses someone following him and sees somebody in a cloak and thinks that it might be Asajj.
He's being tracked by a Cylon and all the others.
Wife. At least that's what he took it for. He's somebody's watching me, somebody's following me, and then he kind of hides, and oh, there's somebody else in a cloak, and they've got funny eyes, and oh, who can it be? Oh, it's just his wife. And speaking of that, my wife was in the room when I was watching this again, right before this, when Anakin has the big reveal. I'm jumping right into it. Has the big reveal and pulls Padme into the shadows and reveals it's her. He gives her the most backhanded compliment I have ever heard in my life. Because,
oh my God, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Not a compliment. He says, "You do look really good in the dark." Really, Anakin?
You've got the face for radio.
That's deeply upsetting that he would say that to his, well, not yet pregnant, but to his wife. You look better in the dark. You sound better when I'm not here.
You think in the montage where she sees his scar and is touching the scar, she's saying something that we don't hear, like, "Now you'd look better in the dark, hon."
Exactly.
I love that comment because those are the asinine comments that we make when we first get married before you've had a few nights on the couch. Like, Anakin's never had a few nights on the couch yet, so he's still not trained. But I loved it because that is something that a person would say to their wife that has not been married very long.
I'm just surprised that Padme didn't say, "So you're saying love has blinded you?" Well, that's not what I...
But if that's the case, then isn't this perfectly in keeping with what we see in Revenge of the Sith? Because he's still bumbling over the lines in episode 3 as far as being able to be the husband that says the right things. Next thing you know, she'll ask if, you know, "Does this one of my many, many, many outfits and my makeup make my butt look big?" And he'll be like, "Oh, well, a little."
And then he'll be sleeping on the proverbial couch, which if it's the couch in that apartment in episode 3, that's pretty much outside. That's going to be cold. Just saying. But along the, shortly following this, in this fabulous scene that's just full of horribly inappropriate things, we get the big C-3PO striptease. That's not weird or awkward for anybody.
The one thing I will say is I think it's silly, but it's in and out. It's just a few seconds. We see the explanation, quote unquote, of the gold plating. I thought it was silly. It kind of harkened back to droids, the way he was able to, like, you know. Sorry, I messed up. Just hit my mic. Let me do that again. It harkens back to droids a little bit, the way suddenly he can move in very flexible ways. So it's a silly moment, but, you know, it was, what, 10 seconds at the most? My biggest problem was the line that Anakin once again delivered poorly. Impressive. Most impressive. I mean, come on. You're not trying to do the Empire Strikes Back line there?
You know, I don't really have a problem with the way that he reveals. It's the music. That is a horrible music choice. That is just terrible. That is bad 70s porn all over it.
You know, because C-3PO has been trained in 350 Chippendale arts. You know, he's been programmed. Was this the Chippendale programming coming out?
Because careful what you say in the kids section.
I'm just saying that the only person that I've ever seen take a robe off like that was a Chippendale dancer. And I'm not saying that.
No, I was going to say it reminded me of... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jen.
It felt like they were trying to mimic some of the old Bugs Bunny cartoons. You know, when Bugs Bunny will dress up like a woman and kind of come out mess with Elmer Fudd. But it just... Something about the music, Dan. It didn't sound like something funny. It was like really bad porn. It was really, really disturbing.
I always thought that was weird. And then when I was watching this, if I remember correctly, it was like the first time I ever showed this to, at one point I had someone living with me who had a child, and the kid was about 4 or 5 years old. And when he first saw this, I remember him seeing that scene and making a reference to, it's just like on that one episode of SpongeBob. So I think this is one of those cases where, you know, it's like Jen said, it's meant to be sort of that regular kind of cartoony, goofy thing. And maybe we look at it as, wait, what music choice? Because we're thinking Star Wars. But a kid who's looking at this just as a cartoon is going to say, yeah, that's just like this other cartoon and this other cartoon and probably half a dozen other ones. Somebody takes off the clothes like that, all slinky. Of course, they're going to play the bad porn music.
Now I have to question any child watching SpongeBob. Now, I do have to say congratulate... Wait, was he back before? Is this when Anthony Daniels started doing C-3PO's voice, or did he do it a few episodes ago, too?
He did it a few episodes ago, too. It's just that it's phoned in is what it originally sounded like. It's not quite as bad here.
Ah, so yes, congratulations to Anthony Daniels for making the plane trip for these lines.
So, no, I actually thought it still sounded phoned in. It sounded like 3PO was like a few alleys down from them delivering the lines. I thought it still sounded pretty bad. Maybe not as bad, but maybe he just, you know, got on a better cellular network at the time or something. But I still didn't think it sounded like he was in the room with them.
C-3PO is right there when they're kissing and fondling and hugging. And I don't know if they're supposed to, because he has his back towards them. It's supposed to give the illusion like he didn't see them. But it's no secret now. It's like C-3PO knows, R2-D2 knows. You know, they know Anakin's having a relationship. And if this scene right
here...
They're
at the wedding, though. I mean, they're right there.
Right. So why isn't C-3PO... I don't know if we want to go into this, but, you know, he's not talking. He wants to talk about every single other thing. He cannot shut up. But for some reason, he doesn't say anything about this relationship, which kind of goes against the grain on what C-3PO's personality is like. It doesn't bother me, but yes. I didn't know if we wanted to discuss that.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we've seen examples of 3PO able to not speak when he's commanded to. I mean, I think the best example, especially if you compare A New Hope along with the radio drama, he doesn't recognize, you know, quote unquote, doesn't recognize Princess Leia in the R2-D2 hologram. Well, the radio drama is, you know, you're to, you know, not acknowledge any, you know, the command he has is that you don't have any knowledge of who Princess Leia is. If someone's to ask, you don't know her. She's not on this ship. So I think we have a little precedent with that. I mean, I'm sure in his programming is you do not reveal this, and he's going to keep it. So if he doesn't have such a command, then he'll tell a story, even though he's not much of a storyteller.
Well, yeah, and it's not like, I mean, he belongs to Padme, so he stays with Padme. It's not like he's going to, you know, I'm going to just, you know, stroll down to the Jedi Temple, have a little chat, see what's up, talk to some folks. He doesn't do that. He stays with his mistress, does as she commands. Now, if the Jedi Council were to stop by for dinner or drinks, you know, then maybe he'd get a little chatty and spill the beans. I don't see them hanging around or, you know, stopping by to visit and just say, hey, I think they have more pressing matters. So I think that they've never found out. It's just they don't have the opportunity. They don't make a lot of visits. They don't stop by for party night.
You got two things, though, that kind of twist around with that, though, kind of going to Baron's broader point that somebody should know, somebody should recognize what's happening at this point. That is something that, as much as Karen Miller's Wild Space will screw up stuff with Anakin's knighting, it does wind up providing us several really good scenes where the Jedi sort of see what's going on between those two right as Attack of the Clones is ending. I think it's either right before the wedding or right after, where they flat out, you know, Yoda tells Obi-Wan they're getting too close. You got to go tell him to stay away from her. It's kind of like they feel, at least the way she's explained it later, that it's sort of a done deal. It's already been dealt with. Of course, it hasn't been. Also, kind of going back to the idea of, well, you know, she belongs to Padme. Well, yeah, but Anakin built him. Anakin gives C-3PO to Padme. So you could turn around and say the exact same thing. Hey, wait a second. Why on earth does she have the droid that Anakin built? You know, there's not supposed to be this relationship between them and whatnot. Why are they exchanging droids? Because we see actually in this episode, I believe it is, where she gives R2-D2 to Anakin for the first time. They've exchanged these droids. They're exchanging these gifts of their companions, so to speak, and yet what, they're not supposed to be, you know, connected at all? You know, nobody noticed how incredibly flushed he was whenever they first met again after 10 years. It's really difficult to believe that there really is a secret being kept here. Although, you have to assume that at least they're pretending it is. Maybe it's sort of like the Holocaust, where even the people who knew something was happening that shouldn't be happening didn't want to get involved. They turned their eyes away from it and let it happen. I know it's kind of an extreme example, but couldn't that be what's happening here?
Well, let me start that over. They certainly weren't suspicious of the droids, because that's like exchanging appliances, right? It was when Padme started wearing Anakin's Jedi Academy letter jacket, that's when they really got suspicious.
Well, she's got the Jabor snippet that she... But she's
it
got
wasn't
the Jabor snippet,
it,
right? She
it wasn't,
wears that
it, at the it wasn't the fact that... she gives him a kiss when she, you know, in episode 2 where they jump on that beast and she gives him a kiss right on the cheek. Or how about the fact that Anakin didn't want to leave her when she fell out of the gunship? Or how about the fact that when Anakin's arm gets cut off in episode 2, Padme runs over to Anakin and gives him a big old hug? I mean, the secret is being kept. And it's Yoda, Obi-Wan, and a couple of the Jedis that are keeping the secret away from the Jedi Council. And that's what's happening.
But that's all stuff from episode two. And presumably, at least if you want to take Wild Space into account from a how do they keep this a secret through all these stories and such, they've used that to try to say, well, it's because they think they nipped it in the bud after Attack of the Clones when it turns out they've already been married or they're about to be married. I mean, there are ways to explain it, but there's also ways to turn around and immediately dash just about any explanation we get, because there are so many freaking sources that try to get their little insights in about this relationship. You'd almost have to go to Lucas for this, and it doesn't seem like he's really giving us much indication of how they keep it a secret much, except for maybe Hostage Crisis in the current series.
Did you just say go to Lucas for this?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not going to George Lucas for anything. I mean, he'll just change it up.
Well, Baron, I think you have a good overall point, which is to say that this portion of the prequels, whether you look at from the movie perspective, some novels, this Clone Wars microseries, whatever, this whole Padme-Anakin relationship, I think overall was poorly written. I mean, you're right. There are a lot of things that do not make sense. And, you know, and I won't necessarily hit this microseries too hard for it. I think it's just a overall quality of prequel trilogy storytelling. It's not very good. It wasn't written well is really the basic way I think we can put it.
Exactly. That's one thing that's never sat well with me, the whole Jedi don't marry thing all of a sudden. I mean, Anakin's fall could have been easily constructed if they had been allowed to marry, because he was too attached and didn't want to lose her. Easy enough. Not necessarily necessary. It wasn't particularly necessary that it be a wife that he had in secret that he didn't want to lose. I mean, honestly, one major crisis there would have been enough. Not necessarily the big secret, too. But this is something that, once again, like Jerry said, microseries didn't come up with this. So it's not their fault that they have to go along with this horrible, nobody knows how to make this be hidden well idea.
You flip it around and say, you know, if this whole Jedi aren't allowed to marry thing existed as of the prequels, why wouldn't it have been mentioned in the classic trilogy? Why wouldn't Obi-Wan have seen how Luke was ogling the hologram of Leia and said, nope, don't try it. If you turned into a Jedi, you won't be allowed to get any of that.
And she's your sister.
Yeah, it saves the kiss and the weird feeling whenever they finally reveal it. Because you know in Return of the Jedi, when they're in the Ewok village, whenever he says, you know, my sister has it, it's you, Leia, the first thing that pops into her head is, oh, God, and I kissed him.
Yet she says, I know, somehow I've always known.
Exactly. Well,
that doesn't explain Echo Base in the slightest.
Yeah, what is the line? If you've always known that he was your brother, you probably shouldn't be kissing him like that.
Okay, this is a side note, but like when Han says, you love him, don't you? And she goes, oh, no, it's not like that. He's my brother. I always just say out loud because I think it's funny, because the look on Harrison Ford's face is just like really confused. I would have given anything if he would just say, wait, how long have you known this?
Yeah, I love how she drops that line like, oh, I've always known he's my brother. Not like I just found out 10 minutes ago, too.
Well, that is the ultimate insult. It's like, wow, when I kiss you, it's like kissing my brother. It's like, okay, I'll leave now.
But the kiss at the base was obviously a get Han Solo jealous kiss. It wasn't like she liked, you know, Jerry, I'm sure you received plenty of those kisses in high school where a girl just wanted to make somebody else jealous and they gave you a few pecks. So
but you don't
I think
kiss
that's exactly
your
what
the next brother. Match. You don't kiss or your kin. In order to make someone else jealous. It's not like, you know, if I'm hanging out and I want to make, you know, my girlfriend jealous or something, that I turn around and kiss my sister. No!
Maybe it was that kiss that told her. Maybe it was that kiss that clued her in on. It's like, wow, that's
she pulls back and does the Elaine Baines.
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future thing. Like it's like kissing my brother. That's why she's got kind of a weird look as she walks out of the room.
All right, so let's go ahead and if we're all good on the 3 seconds that they're in the alleyway, we can go back to the Jedi Council scene.
What's kind of interesting is before he walks into the council chambers where they're basically going to tell him, or it's before they've made the decision based on his experience, which pretty much makes sense. And then he returns from being with Padme, and he's getting ready to be ushered into the council chambers. He immediately is like, you know, I'm here for another scolding. And he's acting all petulant about how, oh, it just seems like all the time what they do is they just scold him for what he does, even when he does things right. And granted, that goes along with what we see in episode 2 with the whole, he's holding me back, and he's throwing stuff in Padme's apartment. But how many times in the Clone Wars have we all sat back and said, why isn't he getting busted? He is constantly disobeying orders, going off on missions on his own, and it doesn't seem like he ever really gets scolded. They just make sure that when things work out in the end, if things aren't completely screwed up, oh well, we'll just forgive him, he's just an impetuous youth. So what scoldings is he even talking about? If anything, he needs more scolding.
Well, my big problem with all that is, it's almost like if I was Obi-Wan and I heard that little outburst, and it's just like, I am just getting ready to send you in to get knighted, and you're talking like, I would have knocked at the door open and I said, hey guys, forget it, I was wrong, kid's a punk, let's go get some drinks. That's just like the wrong time for Anakin to get all stupid on him.
But did you notice who it was that was suggesting it first, even before they say it in the council chamber, even before Obi-Wan brings it up? Was it Evan Peele who said that Chancellor Palpatine has been suggesting this and pushing this for a while? That's right in the theme of what we see in episode 3, where Palpatine keeps trying to push for him to get further and further within his training. I didn't notice that until this viewing.
Yep. Let me ask one question. There are two separate and distinct references to Qui-Gon Jinn. And this was before episode 3 came out. Were they trying to like really remind us a lot about Qui-Gon Jinn because of, I guess, the storyline that I guess at some point was hoping to actually been filmed with Liam Neeson, but obviously that didn't happen. Was there like a bigger link that they're trying to make there, you think, or?
I thought it was all set up for the Dan Quayle joke, the, you're no Qui-Gon Jinn. I knew Qui-Gon Jinn, sir. That's all I
expected. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that was it. What was I thinking?
I thought it was more of just a nod to how Anakin's quote-unquote destiny was supposed to be as of middle of episode 1. Anakin was going to be trained by Qui-Gon Jinn. That was his plan. That's what he wanted. That's what Anakin was expecting. So when it turns out that it's Obi-Wan Kenobi, I mean, there's a little bit what could have been in the back of Anakin's mind. And that's kind of what it struck me is Anakin, I mean, come on, how many people that you knew for 3 days when you were 8, you think were the bomb and they were awesome. And now you're with this guy and all he does is tell you you're wrong. Whereas this guy got down on your level and told you what was going on and he was just awesome. And now you had to go with this other jerk because, well, that guy's dead. So that's kind of where it struck me, a little bit of that immaturity still there in Anakin, that's where he references. And because Qui-Gon still has this great place in his mind.
One of the things that always stood out to me as far as that goes that never seems like it really got explored was whether or not maybe in the early training of Anakin, maybe there could have been some kind of, not really animosity, but just sort of an uncomfortable feel between how that relationship was first developing between Anakin and Obi-Wan. And there's not a whole lot of time spent on that sort of thing. But I mean, you've got a kid who has seen how Obi-Wan reacted to Qui-Gon saying, well, I'm going to train him. And Obi-Wan's like, no, this is dumb. Don't defy the Council Master. I mean, he wasn't necessarily in there for that conversation, but you get sort of the feel from Obi-Wan that he doesn't approve of this. And Anakin must know that the only reason that Obi-Wan says that he'll train Anakin is because Qui-Gon died and made sure that he would. I mean, you would think that sort of sense of well, I'm with someone who doesn't want me. It's almost like, you know, finding out later in life that you were an accidental pregnancy, but for whatever reason, they just decided to just stick with it just because, and there's like a cloud over that parent-child relationship. It seems like that would be the perfect way of sort of exploring some of those internal things that really kind of messes with Anakin and leads him down the path that he goes down as far as acceptance and looking for attachment, but they barely ever touch on it. And I think we're getting a hint of that, or could have seen a hint of that, with that you're no Qui-Gon Jinn thing, a little bit of that you didn't want me in the first place type of reaction coming here. It was really well done. I wish they would have done more with that idea, though.
For some reason, I know he also just had a lot of lines, but I really love seeing Aparo Rancisis, if that's his name, in this scene. I thought that was really cool. I've always kind of found him a very interesting Jedi Knight, a very interesting design. You're not even 100% sure how he works as a Jedi, let alone a functional creature, but it was just really cool to see the way he was animated.
This one only really goes through him taking off again in the Starfighter.
Once they
when they exchange gifts. That's what it is. So really all we've got is the knighting and the exchange of Padawan Braid and R2.
So she gets a lock of his hair and he gets a droid? Man.
Yeah, but he already gave her a droid.
He's a lousy gift giver.
He already gave her a droid. One that he made himself, just like any good child would do.
All she did was take one of her extra ones that didn't get blown up on her starship and give it to him.
I actually really like this scene because I had forgotten it was in here, and I had just recently reread the Revenge of the Sith novel, and they referenced that in there. And so it was kind of neat to see that little exchange. I thought it was cute.
You're so right. That's what I remember. Because they even go into, well, what does a Jedi Padawan or Jedi Knight need with a protocol droid? And what does a senator need with an astromech droid? That I totally remember that. That's exactly what I thought of.
So after his little outburst, Anakin is knighted. And yes, I know there are continuity issues all over this thing. But before we get to those, this is just kind of a cool scene. Dude walks into a dark room. Yoda lights up his saber. Suddenly he's in the middle of, 12 lit sabers. Gets knighted. For all of its continuity issues, just hung on the wall for a second. That's pretty cool.
I always love when Yoda lops off the braid, because it would have really physically been impossible for him to have done that, considering how the braids land, but he does it anyway because he's Yoda. Not surprised maybe half his ear wouldn't have fallen on the ground too, but you're right, Dan. The whole thing about it is really cool. It's like, wow, is that how that's done?
Would have been cool to maybe have a reference back to him thinking he was going to be scolded. You know, like he walks in there and Yoda ignites his lightsaber and he's like, man, I won't do it again, I promise.
Or if he just said, all right, I'm married.
You know, this is the first time I had not read any EU material on knighting. So this was my first introduction and watching a Padawan become a knight. And I thought that was so cool, the way they light up their lightsabers, it's in the dark, and Yoda cuts off the Padawan braid. I mean, it was so cool. It just seems right. You know, it seems like that's the way you should be. You know, you cut off the Padawan braid, it would be the head of the Jedi Council that does it. And it was just, I this scene absolutely blew my mind. And, you know, this is one of the scenes where I'm going to leave that for the end of the series comment. So I'm just going to leave it like that. This is one of the scenes that is so iconic, you know, that you will still think about. Even if you don't remember that this comes from the micro series, you still remember Anakin's braid getting cut off. And it's just one of those things that people know.
I just like that Anakin has this just hilarious smirk on his face when he first walks in there. Like he's finally getting what he's felt like he's kind of deserved for a while. I thought that was kind of a neat little character moment for him. But I haven't read anything about knighting in the EU, so this didn't bother me at all. I thought it was cool, just visually pretty neat.
Kind of going along with what Jen was saying there, we'll get into the whole knighting transformations and all that kind of stuff here in the kind of miniature continuity corner in a second. But it's actually kind of interesting that when Anakin is knighted within the way that the EU originally set it up, there's actually a book that takes place in between the book Jedi Trial, where he's expected to have gone through enough to be considered ready to become a knight, and the time where he actually gets knighted. It's a book called Yoda Dark Rendezvous, and in there, he refers to the idea of sort of technically not really being Obi-Wan's Padawan anymore, even though he still is technically Padawan rank. And it's that same type of idea. It's the, yeah, I've earned it. I know I've earned it. They're going to knight me, so whatever. I don't have to listen to you quite that way anymore. So they've even got that attitude built into some of the stories that take place around it, EU-wise. He's just cocky no matter where he is.
But I also like the smirk that Obi-Wan has. You know, Obi-Wan kind of has that same smirk, you know, that he's kind of accomplished what he told Qui-Gon Jinn that he was going to do, that he was going to train Anakin and that Anakin was going to become a Jedi Knight. And you see that moment of proudness on Obi-Wan's face. And I mean, just the scene is just so powerful. I mean, there's hardly any dialogue. It's all visual. And you get the whole story and you don't have to watch it over and over and over and over and over again, unless, you know, we're trying to retrospect it. But it's just absolutely amazing.
Yes, he's not my problem anymore.
Exactly. Or it's just that Obi-Wan had the he will graduate square in the Jedi pool as to when Anakin would wash out.
You know, Baron, I think that's actually a really good point. We often, at least I often forget about the fact that training Anakin was a promise to his dying master. So you're right, that might also go into some why Obi-Wan overlooks the relationship, why he overlooks various bouts of insubordination, that he does have an oath to his master, Qui-Gon, to see this to the end. I mean, it's even kind of funny in the counselor goes, well, I know this would cause debate, but my Padawan's pretty awesome. Let's make him a Jedi Knight. Nobody else talks about their Padawans. And, you know, even it's even kind of cool when Franciscus makes the comments like, well, he disobeys you. And Yoda's like, well, you disobey me. So you're right. This has to be a really good moment for Obi-Wan as well.
As alluded to, there are some continuity issues, surprise, surprise, with this whole knighting thing. So to take us down the seldom visited but not forgotten continuity quarter, Nathan P. Butler, please guide us.
All right. Yeah, before Anakin takes off in his starfighter that he apparently got way earlier than anybody else because he'll still be flying the Delta 7s in the regular series. Yeah, Anakin's knighting has been sort of an absolute continuity mess pretty much from the get-go. Because remember, this series wasn't meant to be canonical at all in the first place. It was meant to just be kind of an odd promotional tool. The Clone Wars story that was in continuity at the time, 2002 to 2005, was being told in the novels, the video games, the comics, all those types of things. This big multimedia project that was going on between the release of the two movies, meant to bridge one to the next. They created a new 12-month calendar for that, which is pretty much how most people have viewed Star Wars up to that point anyway, even though the official calendar was 10 months long instead of 12. They created this 12-month calendar and actually broke it down and set stories within that 3-year gap very painstakingly in sequence. So each story had a specific month or a specific week within that 36-month gap between the two movies. In continuity by the Clone Wars Multimedia Project plan from back then, Anakin goes through hardships during the war, kind of trials in real life, as we mentioned earlier, instead of doing arranged ones, very much like Obi-Wan describes in this episode, and then he's knighted after the novels Jedi Trial and Yoda Dark Rendezvous. He then receives the scar on his face in the very next story in sequence after those, after his knighting, Dreadnoughts of Rendili. He gets it from Asajj Ventress. All of those events, those three stories, all take place according to the original plan 2.5 years after Attack of the Clones, or 6 months before Revenge of the Sith, so way near the end of the war. Then this cartoon microseries was shoehorned into the continuity, and the main bulk of Chapter 1 all the way up through the end of the Hypori segment in Chapter 21, the one we're reviewing this week, is all said to be 4 months after Geonosis, with the exception of those two Asajj Ventress origin story episodes that were booted back to 1 month after Geonosis to make room for her to be working with Dooku and some other stories set between 1 and 4 months after the war had started. Well, Chapter 21, this one, created an even bigger wrench in the works than Asajj Ventress had. Anakin seemed to be knighted right after the events of the first part of this chapter, 4 months or so into the war, and that contradicted the idea of it being 2.5 years after Geonosis. With this series being of equal canonical status, C canon, with all that other stuff, though, it was this series that was made to bend, not the other stuff, unlike what happens now. The portion that's after Hypori, leading up through Anakin's knighting, was all shifted forward to actually be set 2.5 years after Attack of the Clones. So when we see them escaping Hypori and Aayla is going to be okay and Shaak Ti is going to be okay and all that stuff, it splits right after that. And all the stuff with the discussion about Anakin being knighted and all that, that's all jumped way forward in the timeline to 2.5 years after Attack of the Clones. In the gap between Yoda Dark Rendezvous and Dreadnoughts of Rendili. So he's getting knighted when the multimedia project said he was supposed to be knighted. That also allowed for a retcon to be put in to say that Obi-Wan joins the Jedi Council between those same novels as well. So he could be sitting with the council members in the micro series when they're discussing Anakin's knighting. Otherwise, why was he even in the room if he wasn't on the council? The only major continuity gaffe that left was just the length of Anakin's hair, which was already long in the episode 3 style by the time of his knighting in the novels and comics. But really, hair wasn't something they were going to make a bad pun, split hairs about. Of course, now, that's all in flux again. The current T-Canon Clone Wars cartoon series that's airing on Cartoon Network has shaken things up, with Anakin being knighted and scarred much earlier than it was ever anticipated. In fact, the tie-in novel Wild Space by Karen Miller that I mentioned earlier has put Anakin's knighting at a mere month after Geonosis, knighting him a full 3 months earlier than even the microseries would have had him promoted in the first place. And all this has really sort of thrown into question how, if at all, the continuity will be able to be retconned and restructured to make everything work. and which, if any, date for Anakin's knighting that we've seen so far, or dates for anything else for that matter, are going to remain in place when the smoke clears. Suffice to say, though, Anakin's knighting, which is a big continuity issue now, it's been a source of continuity frustration for a lot longer than the current cartoon series has been around. It's just that with the current one being the biggest problem recently, or one of the bigger problems recently, it's not something that we get hung up on. The micro series glitches, we just figure, eh, that was years ago, it's been fixed. It'll just have to be fixed again, apparently.
All right, thank you, Nathan. So Anakin is knighted. At some point, we will find out later. Him and Padme exchange a tender hologram. Very strange. He's gifted with R2-D2 and flies away in his shiny new Jedi Starfighter. And thus ends chapter 21.
She has a collection box. What is the other item that's in that box that she's keeping with the Padawan braid? That was my question.
It's a pork snippet.
The pork snippet. Snippet.
Easy for you to say.
So what?
Nobody can say it. The little thing that he carved and gave to her on episode the starship one. In episode one that she's holding when she's dead in episode three. Because apparently they found that.
That is a great callback, man. That makes that scene
cold.
That makes that scene even way more better than I thought, because I thought that was probably from like another battle or something. But if that is from episode one, wow. I mean, Tartakovsky bringing that in and having that as the two things that are kept in that box that Padme's keeping, that is more forward thinking. That is more forward thinking than Filoni is ever given. You know what I'm saying? It's like, wow.
Makes you wonder who was the one that found it and realized they should have her holding it when she's dead. You know, who would have known?
It wasn't George Lucas.
It has to be C-3PO. C-3PO has to have the one who given it to her, because he knows. It'll be very interesting, Nathan, to see that story.
Nathan, do you mean in real life who thought to put it in the movie, or who would have thought
in the universe, who would have seen that and recognized the significance of it? But I think Baron's right on the head on that one. It was probably C-3PO. C-3PO would have been one of the few who would have known. But remember, they're talking about giving C-3PO a mind wipe. So I guess it's a question of when do they do the mind wipe in relation to the funeral. But absolutely, it could have been the Jabba Sabe. It could even, I guess, theoretically have been Jar Jar. Because Jar Jar, I guess, would have seen that when she was... You know, when she was with them in the first place. I doubt that Obi-Wan paid all that much attention to it, but she got it. Didn't she get it in episode one while Jar Jar was supposedly sleeping in the same room? So maybe Jar Jar noticed. For once, he does good.
I was thinking you were asking, like, from the forward thinking of Filoni, who would have thought to have included that in the scene. And that's why I said, well, it wasn't George Lucas, because he couldn't even remember to get, you know, they had to go back and reshoot the whole Anakin, Obi-Wan getting the Anakin's lightsaber bit, so.
All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to listen to us discuss Chapter 21 of the Clone Wars micro-series. I want to thank my co-hosts, Jen, Nathan, Barrent, and the Barnes & Noble that he's in, and Jerry for joining me to discuss this episode, and we will see you all back again next week.
Bye, everybody.
See you next time.
Had a great time, guys. Can't wait till next week.
See ya. See if you can figure out which other episode has Barrent at the Barnes & Noble talking in it.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars, and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
Every week we record enough time that we could have fit in watching both DVDs, and we still aren't done.
It's not my fault. You guys can talk for an hour and a half about 3 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm trying to hold my tongue here, Nathan, but...
I know.
Come on, you and Barrett. You and Barrett, yeah.
I know.
You guys could still be arguing over what happened in episode 3, so...
Yeah, but see, if we knew that we were doing like 3 or 4 episodes in a night, we'd have to cut it shorter to get done in time. We'd have to parcel everything out.
We're not going down that road. Remember, kids, we're not allowed to say the words posthumous, rule of two, or brother-in-law on Republic Forces Radio Network anymore.
Although we say each one every week and on the forums.
Yes, we're going to stop doing that because 5 pages of discussion about one word is just too much, too much.
Yes.
Oh, geez. The Russian guy. What's his name?
Even Peel.
Oh, you beat
Nathan. Nice job. Nice job.
Although not that he's Russian in this cartoon, but yeah.
Yes, he talks like facing the mirror.
But except for
sorry, Dan, didn't mean to hijack the show.
No, you're fine. Watch your mute. Nathan, on a side note, you are in Georgia, so if you did do that, it would be okay.
Ouch.
I thought I was one state over from that, but fine, you heathen.
Sorry, I was going to say Alabama. But
I'm in the children's section, Dan, okay? I'm in the children's section.
Are you wearing headphones?
I am.
Well, then it's okay. The kids can't
hear. Unlimited incest.
All right. See, now, let's get, you are in the kids' section.
Excuse me, sir. We're going to have to move you along now.
Yeah.
Unless that's the title of one of the books in the children's section, because those are becoming much more enlightened areas of reading nowadays. You can have kids reading about anything in school now.
Sadly, Barrett wasn't able to join us for the remainder of this episode because he was escorted from the premises. And I have babbled a lot.
I'm sorry, Dan, what?
That was my little continuity corner. No.
Hello?
Sorry, that was
did you hit the
that was you.
Button?
Let me pick up with the other me real quick.
Yes.
That was the fastest hang up and callback I've ever gotten in my life.
And now it's all staticky too. Crap.
I don't hear it on my end.
It's like da, 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 da.
I don't hear that either.
Yeah, I don't
sorry, that was me speaking Huttese. Let me declare my throat.
Oh my gosh. Nathan, is that coming through on your end?
No, I'm not getting any kind of static at all.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds good.
I'll live with it as long as you're not hearing it, so hopefully it's not in the recording. Right. So
actually, there is something wrong with the audio. You're not making sense.
The words aren't Aww. Coming. It's like I had a stroke.
What was I going to say? Shoot. All right.
I can't follow you on this path. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm getting the soda. I'll be right back.
Okay. Should I go ahead and make my comment, or should we wait for Jerry to get back so he doesn't say something?
I'm sure he's going to say something. One way or the other, he'll say something.
You're not my real dad!
I want to thank everybody for joining us on a very inappropriate episode of RFRN, where we try to outdo now playing by talking about the Holocaust, incest, and abortion all in one night.
You know that's getting cut out, sentence. Rockstar. You know that's getting cut out.
Oh, that's outtake, baby.
I'm going to say incest.
For a transcript of this episode of Dr. Phil, call. Yeah, exactly.
You're right, Jen. He has this look like, I got over. I made it. Here, let me say that again because she's... Blah, 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 blah. I agree with you, Jen, God, now I forgot what I was going to say.
You know,
that's because that announcement was about you.
There you go.
Please don't podcast for the children's section.
No more talking of incest.
Let me ask you.
No. Barrett, did you have a comment, or are we ready to give it to Nathan's continuity on this?
Ready to give it over to Nathan. I'm just glad that Jerry has come over to the dark side and agrees with me.
I feel dirty.
I want some Twizzlers.
I bet you do.
Guys, stop a second. Can I ask, what's the joke with the Twizzlers? Have I missed this?
Like 2 weeks ago, or when we were doing the whole Dirge episodes, and by the end, Barrett was really worried. He's like, I'm sitting here eating Twizzlers. He's like, he was halfway through a bag of
I remember the comment that Nathan made about Dirge looking like Twizzlers with the sauce. Yeah, okay.
Yes, because I put that in like every comment on last week's show.
It was one of our sessions where we had went over the 3 hour agreed upon time. We never do that. And it was going into like the fourth hour. And like it was like my second box of Twizzlers, and so I had made the joke about how I was wired up, and and it made the outtakes, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, Barrett's recording diet is a bag of Twizzlers and a 6-pack of Jolt Cola.
Yes, Jolt, four loco.
I was just told to, if I can continue to do the podcast as long as I don't sit on the ground. So I'm good to go. You guys are good to go. Yes, they said I could not sit on the ground. It's
sir, you have to leave the restroom though.
But she says I can continue to do podcasts here, and it's not an uncommon thing. So
we're not going to make you sit in Barnes & Noble through another episode, because honestly, if I have to edit out Barnes & Noble noise of two episodes, I'm going to kill myself.
So, you're going to lose the will to live?
Exactly. I'm going to lose the will to live, especially if she makes any more freaking announcements. So,
look, if you're going to start talking about people losing the will to live, isn't this a good time to mention the fact that Natalie Portman did finally have the baby and didn't lose the will to live?
Did she? She had a baby and didn't lose the will to live? Good job.
Yeah, the art or life did not imitate art in this case. Although that did become a big, long string of jokes on Twitter and Facebook that day. All kinds of lost the will to live jokes.
Bet it did.
As long as it's one kid and not two, she doesn't have to lose the will to live.
Exactly.
You can live for one, but screw it if it's two, all that kind of stuff.
That's right. Well, you know what? Anybody who's had twins, I've heard, might consider, you know, no.
Except all right. Okay.
I'm a twin. Right. I'm a twin.
Yeah, we know. You and Kid Fisto.
No. I have a real twin. I have a fraternal twin. I have a real twin, real life.
We're fraternal. No, Barrett, that's your brother-in-law.
No.
Would that be like?
I will drive to Atlanta tonight to smack you, Nathan.
Would that be like?
Here's the funny part.
Boy, what?
He's Everest boy. But we're fraternal twins. We're fraternal twins, so we come from two different eggs, so we're special. But I always tell my mom, and she hated this. I'm like, you know, we could have come from two different dads.
Oh, wow. Damn. I don't know why your mother would hate that.
I have no idea why she wouldn't like that.
What the hell?
See, I thought you were going to go with, well, he's a big Trekkie, and no. You went the complete other way. Mom's a hoe. That's good.
That's great.
Just hey, one is, more box to check off on the most inappropriate RFRN ever.
Yes.
Hey, Barrett, I have a question about you being a twin. Are one of you left-handed and one of you right-handed?
My brother's ambidextrous. But another interesting fact is that when we'd have to take pictures at school, right, all the twin pictures, and we'd be the only ones. My mom used to dress us alike as children, and we don't look alike. So we just look like two friends who are walking down the street next to each other. So, yes. But to answer your question, he's ambidextrous. I'm right-handed.
Is he a Trekkie?
That would be awesome.
Original trilogy, he's in the classical man,
music.
All the way.
He's in the classical music and chess.
His trilogy. Name is Tenarib, and when one of them gets hurt, the other one feels it.
Tenarib! I'm naming my next child Tenarib.
Like last week, that's not going to work.
Oh man, Barrett's not gonna make it home.
Dear Lord. All right.
Paddy wagon.
Yeah. Before mall security escorts Barrett, let's all say goodnight.
Good night, folks.
Barrett, where are you?
I'm here. Good night, everyone.
That's not it. Where is the Barnes & Noble that you're in?
The Barnes & Noble I am in is in Calabasas.
Okay.
That's where I'm at, Calabasas.
Okay. Shut up now. We're going to close.
Yes.
Mute. Mute again. And mute more. Mute for more than 1 second.
Yes. And I'll see if I'll see if I can come up with some asinine things to argue with Nathan about, even though that he's much more learned than any of us on Star Wars. So, Nathan, I'll come up with something.
I'm like Jerry on Now Playing. No, I'm kidding.
All right. This has been a very educational episode.
Just want to say Bob has...
You know what? You can say it, and I will put it in the outtakes with the...
I'll get another... droid sound over it or something.
Either that or I'll reverse it. We have a local radio station, and for the longest time, they edited swear words out of their songs by just reversing it.
Nice.
So, like, there was a point, I can't remember what song it was. It was a fairly poppy song, but it was popular, and it had the F-bomb in it a few times. And three or four times in the course of the song, whoever it was would say something about cuff. So...
I'm like,
oh no!
I'm picturing CeeLo now.
Whenever they do that or they bleep out, it's like my son's six, and it's like he can figure it out. Yeah. It's like, yeah, exactly. It's like they should just not like bleep. They should just leave it out because when they bleep it out, my 6 year old whispers me, "He said the F word, didn't he?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he said the F word."
Yeah.
That's actually what makes Robot Chicken funnier. I think if Robot Chicken went the route of Family Guy
when they did that, that's what we were watching.
I love you, f*** you thing, and they actually made it said instead of censoring it, I don't think it'd be nearly as funny. But when you hear Palpatine cussing up a storm and it's just the beeping and stuff, it's funny as hell.
It's definitely funny to a 6 year old when he knows that somebody's cussing and they're beeping it out. Barrett, trying to figure it out.
It's funny to a 36-year-old, too.
Yeah. Barrett, do you tell him to shut the cuff up and go to bed?
You know what is very funny about that is, yes, I do. No. If he says or whatever, it doesn't bother me.
Kid section.
Yes.
We just lost Barrett.
Barrett's gone. Yeah, Barrett. Oh, no, Barrett.
The mall cops got him.
He was probably escorted for...
Yes. You have to leave now.
All right, I've already sold the video game system, so here's the new one. Transformers Dark of the Moon for PlayStation 3 came out last week. I've already platinumed on it. I'm selling it for $45, and I ship it free inside the U.S. Anybody? Damn. I tried. I gotta come up with something to sell every week now, at least until this stuff's done. Hopefully, it'll be a couple weeks.
Our FRNs is personal Craigslist.
Yeah.
It's all right. Jen's talking this whole episode. My ask wifed me. My wife asked me the other day if Jen's on this one.
If I'm on it? Oh no!
Oh,
is it? Yes, she is.
Oh.
Like you guys just steamroll over, don't you? Yes.
I think we do need a rule in all seriousness that on every topic, every time you bring up a new topic, Dan, throw it to Jen first and then just let the rest of us kind of fight over each other. But we no one speaks until Jen gets a turn. And Jen, if you just well, I don't really got anything, just let us know, then we'll talk. But I think we need that Jen in first rule.
I'm just not a really talky person. I just don't talk that much, so it's okay.
Well, we got to do something about that, Jen. You're going to have to liven up couple Red Bulls or something before this. Bag of Twizzlers. There you go.
Bag of Twizzlers. There we go.
She could be like the, if she doesn't speak first, she could be sort of like the voice of judgment at the end, and be at the end of each topic and be like,
and
Jen
so
wins. Everyone else is wrong.
Yeah, be the person that hands us out points for good comments they do on there's a ESPN show, Pardon the Interruption, or one of those shows where somebody they give out points. Whose line is it anyway? In our winner tonight is Dan.
Wait, the winner has to edit the show, right?
Oh,
as long as we don't do a hoedown.
Winner has to do the outro credits and the style of Jen's.
And the winner gets to do something special with me. It involves jelly.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Where's Boy Everest?